our suppliers on Alibaba lying to us?
First of all, let me, you know, make a statement here. I wouldn't say outrightly they're lying. I would say some of them sell ethically, some of them don't. But then again, the point is, and this is a very common saying in our company, we say trust is good, but control is even better.
Why don't more sellers
do this?
There has been a very big lacuna in the industry of e-commerce and D2C. Most sellers, again, they don't know whether it's mandatory or not. They don't understand the nuances of it. They don't understand the basics as to why is it coming, how is it coming, and it's lack of knowledge, lack of responsibility.
How do you survive Amazon? Welcome to Surviving Amazon, the podcast that exposes the brutal truth behind selling on Amazon. This is a war zone and only the strongest survive. We bring you insider stories and strategies from experts and sellers who've been through all the ups and downs and the moments that made them question if it was even worth it. I'm Johnny Bradley, and today we're joined with Rahul Chawla. He's helped sellers fight through the chaos of selling compliance with Amazon with Kima. So he's here to share exactly how sellers survive that ever-increasing compliance and legal requirements that sellers face. So Rahul, how do you survive Amazon?
Follow the law. Keep everything, everybody and everything safe. You know, it's been very old story. People think Amazon is the one, you know, coming after sellers, and they are getting stricter now and stricter then. It's just actually the authorities of different governments who set up the rules, and Amazon is just a messenger, to be honest. So you are selling in the UK, you have to follow the UK regulatory bodies who have set up the laws, and you have to follow the law for product compliance. If you sell in the US, you have to follow them. You have to sell EU, you have to follow them. So Amazon basically tells you that, okay, these are the rules of each market. Just follow them, you'll be fine. Okay.
You overshoot the messenger, basically.
Yeah. So because, you know, they are the platform and they have certain responsibility to spread the message across so that, you know, everything that is sold on the platform is compliant. So they make sure that you know, and that's why they have actually put a lot of very helpful educational support pages on their website in Seller Central, where you have everything. So you can learn from there, you know, and understand everything and get things sorted for you. To avoid all the issues, you just have to follow the country level requirements. Okay. In case of US, yes, state level requirements as well. And you'll be fine. So if you sell in the US, you have to do testing as per CPSIA or California Prop 65 or whatever else is applicable. You sell in the UK, you have to follow the UK requirements, you know, get the testing done with the UK standards or the European standards or Japanese standards, and you will be okay. You know, the thing is, most sellers don't realize that this is legally mandatory. They try to skip it. Knowingly, unknowingly, most often actually it's unknowingly when they skip it, because they don't know even what it entails to. It's mandatory, it's legal, they don't understand the details, and that's why they, you know, mistakenly miss it or do it wrongly. But people who know usually do it, but at the same time, yeah, some people who know, even they try to cut corners just to save the cost. But the point is, this one thing keeps your whole business afloat. You know, it is actually covering, you know, the risk on a very big scale. Like, if you do it wrong, they can shut your business down at any time. And I'm not talking about Amazon. It's just not Amazon again. Amazon will be the first one to question, and you should be glad that it's only Amazon to question. If it goes further ahead to the authorities, you will have much more serious questions.
Yeah, absolutely. And so that's something that I guess a lot of sellers don't realize. They think that, you know, Amazon is the one putting all these rules in place. If they must have this document, that document, and blah, 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 blah. Thing is that, look, they've just been told that they need to ask for those things for their own compliance, right?
Yeah.
Because they're the marketplace.
Yeah.
And if you're not able to appease them, then actually you're probably selling the product illegally, right? And getting found out by the authorities is a lot more dangerous than getting getting found out by Amazon, right?
Yeah.
And
And you know, the question of why it should be done, it's very simple. It just to keep you, me, our loved ones safe enough. The reason why people don't know about it, it's because it's now common people selling on Amazon. You know, earlier, and even now, you have Sainsbury's, you have Tesco, you have Walmart, you have other retailers. They sell safe products, okay? And because they have dedicated teams manage that thing, because they have their own brands being sold. They have been in the market for so many years, and they have been following the law already, you know? So it's like a proper big business managing everything, making sure they follow the law and they sell safe products. While now, it's just a common consumer selling to other consumer. So of course, a normal consumer, you go down the street and you ask somebody like, hey, do you think you have lead in your product? He might not even know what lead is. It's very possible. While the same person might start selling products on Amazon or somewhere else, the very next day when he meets somebody, gets an idea, oh, this can be a good passive income, let me start selling on Amazon, you know. So that person who didn't know at all about what a chemical can be, he starts selling, things change.
Yeah.
So
how does that common person that said that I want to operate legitimately, I want to be a bigger business, but I don't know what the legal requirements are. I'm going into a product category which I don't have a deep knowledge on. It's not part of my history as an employee of a company or whatever. How do I even navigate?
Sure. So first of all, small, big, medium, whatever the size of the company or the business be, individual seller or a pro account or whatever else, nobody's exempted from following the law. Everyone has to follow the same product compliance laws. Okay, you become Sainsbury's or you become Tesco or you become an Amazon seller or you put up a shop, on the road. You have to follow the law no matter what. They won't see whether you're a small business or a big business. Okay, now how to navigate? Again, of course, for a smaller business, it can get hard. You might not be having enough budget to hire a professional compliance manager. So that's why companies like us, we are there, and even, bigger companies, they also hire us to do certain, similar jobs. So we look at a product and we tell you what is required or not required. So you tell us, okay, right, I'm selling this product. This is what it looks like. Send us the pictures. I'm going to, market it and sell it as a product which has to be used by this certain age bracket. This is going to be its use, and this is where I'm sourcing from, and this is where I'm selling. Just simple, very basic details. And what the product is made of. Okay. Once you give us these details, within a few hours, we give you the full quotation, including what test it needs, how much time it's going to take to deliver the report to you after we receive the samples, and what's the money it's going to take. Yeah, it's fairly simple.
And that's something that you guys, is that a paid service that you guys do?
So as long as it's just about quotations, it's not charged at all. We charge only when we receive the samples to test them. Okay. So you may ask for as many quotations as you want. Yeah, for free. And that's something.
That common seller is going, look, I'm starting this business. This might be my first product ever. The misconception is, and this is what I've done in the past, right? I've paid people on Upwork or whatever to go and find out the compliance requirements, and often thinking like, do I trust them? Are they going to give me all the information? Like, they know more than me, but are they the right people? And I'd pay a few hundred dollars for that, and I wish I'd known about Keem before, because that could have saved not only a lot of money but also given a lot more trust to say that I'm actually getting the right information, and then having the test done, it could all be one nice process. So for existing sellers, it seems like a no-brainer, but especially for new sellers, where this is such a minefield and it's very easy to get it wrong, it's super easy to get it wrong. and that you're not having to pay to get that quotation and say, well, this is what you're going to need, this is what's going to be required. I think that's a really big eye-opener for people, because a lot of sellers at the beginning, they want to cut costs, right? They don't want to necessarily, I've got another question to follow up on this, right? They think, oh, I'm going to save them some costs here because I'm going to then put the money into the product. So I'm not going to pay for that search or compliance or whatever. And I'm just going to go to the supplier on Alibaba. I'm going to get their certificates. And because they said it's fine. Oh, yeah, you can use ours. We'll send them to you. So in that sense, are suppliers on Alibaba lying to us, right? About, yeah, you can just use ours.
First of all, let me, make a statement here. New sellers, small sellers, experienced sellers, they still all do mistakes. I have come across so many very experienced sellers selling on Amazon for 15, 16, 12 years, 10 years. Even they do the same mistakes as a new one. So a message to the new ones, you are not the only ones doing these mistakes. It's fine. Things happen. And even the experienced ones are doing it. So no need to feel bad about yourself. Okay. Now, coming to Alibaba and the suppliers there, I wouldn't say outrightly they're lying. I would say some of them are selling. Some of them sell ethically. Some of them don't. Okay. Alibaba is just, again, a marketplace. You put up your factory details there, nice and tidy, very nicely looking, just to attract customers. Same as like Canton Fair. I've been to Canton Fair several times when I was living in China 8 years before, for 8 years until last year. And there also, they would put nice, booths in Canton Fair or Hong Kong trade shows, showing you everything. Those people are salespeople. Their job is to sell. Okay. They will tell you things. Now, again, it's about ethical, not non-ethical selling. Some people will be upfront to you like, okay, this is my product. I have this and not this. Okay. Some people will just say anything to you just to grab your attention. Okay. Mm-hmm. But then again, the point is, and this is a very common saying in our company, we say trust is good, but control is even better. You can trust your factory, which you might have worked for donkey number of years, but things can still go wrong. And there's no harm having a small control just to mitigate any potential risk, because eventually it's going to fall over you, right?
Yeah.
So fine, the Alibaba supplier says, okay, I have this certificate, that certificate. Okay, Mr. Supplier, send it to me. I will have a look. That's fine. You can have a look at it, maybe contact experts like me. We can also have a look at it. But having said so, majority of those certificates, first of all, they shouldn't be called certificates. They are test reports. Okay. It's a wrong terminology usually used. CE also is not a certificate. It's a marking. It's not a certificate at all. Okay. So we can look at those documents, reports, and everything else that they provide to you. But then it's super hard to identify whether they are genuine or not. The genuineness of a report can only be identified by the actual issuer. If I get a report that has been sent out by Kima, I can quickly look into my database and check and tell you, okay? That's point number one. The point number two is, fine, they give you a report, but then the point is that report genuine? Is it from the recent date? It's easy, you can change PDFs, you can change the date, you can, put whatever you want, okay? You can put my name, your name, anybody's name over there, put a date like since from yesterday, okay? The verification is becoming tougher and tougher day by day as the technology progresses, okay? It could be a report that could be all tampered with. It could be a report that might not be from a proper laboratory that has got accreditation or not, because we as a laboratory, we need to have ISO 17025 accreditation. That's like minimum. There are furthermore we need to have before. Without that, we cannot operate legally and ethically, okay, which we do. But the other lab, it's hard. You don't know what kind of laboratory they used. We know whether it's genuine or not. And then the biggest issue being that report is from a lot which is already probably gone, or probably from a sample which is lying in their showroom, which is the best of the sample they made with the best materials.
Yeah.
What you are responsible for is for your 500,000, 2,000 pieces, whatever you are selling, for your lot. So the best way to do this is you pick up samples from the very beginning of your production in double quotes, your production. Those samples should be sent freshly to the laboratory and tested. Rest all is basically irrelevant, to be honest. Okay. Now, the question also might come like, oh, you know, I do this product every year on, let's say, Christmas. Should I test every year? Ideally, every year. The reason being, these regulations, laws, they keep getting updated. Okay. Secondly, your factory might have a new set of people. You don't know what kind of ways of working have changed in the factory. Their own financials might have been disrupted. Anything can happen. Okay. Especially after Chinese New Year, come March, and things can be entirely different. Okay, and especially since COVID, there are a lot of struggles in the business. I'm not saying for everybody, but then knowingly, unknowingly, deliberately, not deliberately, things can go wrong. So again, you have to control your own business. You can't let everything to be put on supplier. And fine, you know, you can write all the contracts you want with the supplier. Like, okay, you are responsible for this, this, and this. If you don't follow, I can put a claim on you and get the money back. But then, yeah, you lost your business. Your listing is down. Your inventory is not there. Your products are not safe. You're losing your brand image. You're getting bad reviews. All sorts of things can happen. So the supplier will say, yeah, fine, go. You know, I'm done with business with you. Bye-bye, Mr. Seller. I go to somebody else. He wouldn't care. He might not care.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So you raised a few really like important points there. One, I think that a lot of people don't appreciate is the staff turnover and how that can affect product quality. And even just like you said, mistakes happen, right? Maybe it's intentional, maybe it's not.
Yeah.
The business might be doing worse as a factory, and maybe they do source a raw material from a different supplier that's cheaper, and you don't know their process. And that can happen on a yearly basis. So when people think, oh yeah, well, I've got my product and I've got all my compliance, I did all my tests, but that was 3 years ago. Well, what's changed in 3 years? Has your business changed in 3 years? Probably. Has your profitability changed in the last 3 years? Yes, it definitely has. Well, theirs has as well. And how do you know what they're doing to you know, maintain their margins or whatever with their staff? So like once you appreciate, I think that look, they're another business. They've got people and you know, manufacturing isn't something that people love to do. It's high turnover. Like they will channel through staff, won't they? So having those compliance checks on a yearly basis is, you know, accounting for that as part of your product costs, I think is really important. But also thinking, well, how can I leverage this in my marketing, right? So I was looking at a product the other day, which I'm thinking about going into. And it's a sort of product where you actually want to know that it's compliant and it's safe. And a lot of the sellers, then they're saying that it's safe, but they're not showing it to be safe. They're not showing the reports, like the last batch of production. But what's the safety of that particular product? And I was thinking, well, it would actually be really good then if I was to do a product within that market. Every single batch is tested. And we use that marketing, and that becomes a marketing angle because we're saying we are super, super safe. Here's the test reports. You know, you can go and check, maybe even teach people, this is how you go and check this, this battery or whatever. And it gives you that trust the customers kind of need it right now. That I think is really important. The same with product inspections, right? A lot of people, they might have a product inspection on their first order and everything's fine. So they go, okay, cool. Well, I don't need it anymore. Well, was those products. What about these products? And if you have, let's say you have to do 10 orders with a factory, 9 orders, you have your inspection. On the 10th order, you don't. That's when everything goes wrong.
Yeah.
Right. And
yeah.
I guess compliance is the same, is you have one, everything is good. But then in the future, it doesn't mean that it always will be good,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, at the same time, I wouldn't expect, and it's not actually required that you test every shipment. Like if you have shipments every month or every 3 months, fine, you don't do it, but at least do it once a year. Okay. Or at least you might as well ask it like, hey, I did it back in July. Do I need it again now in the month of June or August? No harm checking. We don't charge you for checking with us. Again, we charge you only when we see the sample and we test. We charge you only for the test report, that document. Before that document, service is ordered, you don't pay for it. So no harm checking with us. Come to us.
Yep.
We'll help you out.
It's better to be safe than sorry, right?
Yeah.
But so you mentioned this earlier, like lots of big sellers maybe make mistakes with this. Like why don't more sellers do this?
Very good question. So there has been a very big lacuna in the industry of e-commerce and D2C. Most sellers, again, they don't know whether it's mandatory or not. They don't understand the nuances of it. They don't understand the basics as to why is it coming, how is it coming, like we discussed in the beginning of this call. But yes, things are changing. They have started doing it. They might, be annoyed with Amazon or whoever else, like, oh, they are blocking our listing. So like September 30, Amazon, I think, I'm not a seller, so I don't know, it's a conflict of interest for me, so I cannot sell. But I got to know that there is some new rule from 30th of September, which was 9 days ago, that you have to upload these test reports. Only then the listing will be live. There is something you can check better, on this part. So they are trying to enforce it. And there will be no way left for small, big, or any level of sellers to skip it. Okay? They're really making sure that everybody follows it. Why people don't do it? Again, it's lack of knowledge, lack of responsibility, if I may call this out. They're just looking at budgets. Maybe they didn't budget for it on time. And that's a very important point I always tell on every such discussion platform is, we don't charge you for quotations. Okay. It is mandatory. So you have to account for the cost. So why not ask us in the beginning itself when you're calculating the cost? You go on XYZ platform for, looking for best-selling products. Okay. You contact few suppliers. You get some quotation from suppliers, £1, $1 per piece, whatsoever. You do your calculation, comes out 500 pieces, $500. Great. What about the other cost? You calculate everything, logistics, everything you have put in there, but you didn't ask us for the mandatory cost of testing for compliance, which might be 200, which might be 500, it might be 5,000, 10,000. We don't know until we see the product. Okay. So you can always ask us for free quotations, get the quotation from us, put that in the calculation, and then you know whether that product is profitable or not. The problem which happens, and going back to your question again, is why people are not doing it, even the big sellers, because they never accounted for it. And they do it like, oh, okay, I'll see whenever I get caught, then I will look into it and let me try my luck. Well, to be honest, those sellers don't get successful. They might be successful for a couple of years, 3 years, 4 years. If they really get lucky, maybe more than five, a little more, but not too long. And at least not now. They are clamping down on such sellers. They want to get rid of these such sellers. And it's again coming from the government bodies. I'm part of some platforms and forums which are organized by the government bodies, and they are really pushing hard on the retailers to make sure that everything is compliant, whatever is being sold. So it's actually coming from there, and it's fair. I mean, would we like any of us or our loved ones getting harmed by a product sold on Amazon? I'm sure the answer must be no from everyone. Tell me one person, one seller who would like to buy a product that's unsafe. If the answer is no, then I'm sure the conscience shouldn't allow in the first place for the seller also to sell something that's unsafe or untested. Speaking of big sellers, now here is a tricky situation we came across just yesterday. I had a call with, not with Amazon, another very big mainstream retailer in the UK. It is also possible It happens with big sellers though, not beginners or small ones. But then you might be doing a very wonderful product, very unique, okay? But sometimes the test standards might not be there in the market, okay? So this particular product, I don't mention the product for the confidentiality reasons. This particular product is for children, okay? And there is not exactly a test standard yet, okay? They tried everything, possible. They tested as much as possible. Brilliant seller. I really applaud what they have been doing so far. But then this retailer comes their way, they say, oh, look, we still see a risk of a consumer getting, hurt by the product. We are not saying it's going to happen, but there is a slight risk, and we are being careful here because you sell it in our stores. So we have to have more confidence in your product that it's not going to harm anybody. So do something more about it. So the seller, again, I really appreciate this particular seller. They went forward, they looked into with the laboratories, and we came to a conclusion that there is a draft standard being it's in process, it's going to come very soon. So he's like, okay, fine, let me test with the draft standard. It's fine. I want to make sure that I'm selling the safe product. The retailer, the seller, and us, our laboratory people, we had a call yesterday. We discussed on the points of the regulation of the standard, just to make sure to give enough confidence to the retailer and also for the final consumer. I mean, eventually the retailer is also looking for the confidence in the consumer itself, who is going to use it. And we came to a conclusion, and now we are going to test a bit further to make sure the product is safe. So my point being, there are good and bad sellers everywhere. Okay, we have to take inspiration from the good ones. Okay. We don't have to say, oh no, look, everybody is selling this product. I don't see a problem. They didn't do it. Why should I do it? Yeah, look at the others who are doing it. Maybe a smaller fraction, but there are such people who are doing things the right way. So I would look up to somebody more inspiring.
Yeah, so this is a really interesting point there, because obviously for an Amazon seller, we start on Amazon, but we don't want to be there forever, right? Because you don't want to hoard yourselves, all your eggs in one basket. And a lot of people, sometimes they go to their own websites, or they even look at other retailers. For example, if you have a DIY product, you might then want to sell in B&Q or Homebase or whatever retail stores. When they're looking at, hey, are we going to stock this product? Are they doing their due diligence to make sure that you've got all of these test reports?
Yeah, they will look for it. So this particular seller, they also were selling on Amazon for several years, and their product is brilliant, like very unique, very innovative, and they could see the sales were growing, and they could see the potential with other retailers. So they say, okay, let's approach them. So when they started approaching, these retailers, started asking them more questions. So these questions can come from any retailer, and look, these questions can come from Amazon also. So Amazon itself also has teams built up for compliance. There are teams in Luxembourg, there are teams in London, there are teams in Seattle, in India, in China, in some other offices who are actually looking into these topics. And when you receive a message from seller support, again, there are people behind them who are actually putting up those questions forward to you. Okay. So it's not like Amazon doesn't look into it. They are looking into it. They are doing their job. But then, yeah, getting annoyed, oh, they are making the business difficult. They ask for XYZ things. It's business. If the seller didn't know, it's on the
It's
seller.
just
It's not on
normal.
Amazon.
If you're saying, hey, look, if John Lewis, they're gonna stock my product, so they're gonna do this due diligence, so why shouldn't Amazon, right? Right. It's just because Amazon has a different marketplace, but it is exactly the same. It's still a marketplace, like John Lewis would be. And this is there's another question this as well. And one of the goals that a lot of entrepreneurs have is selling their business, right? They want to build it, and then they might want to sell it, but really, when the big payday can come. This is a question that I guess could people might not even think about, but could be a concern. Let's say that I had not been compliant and I had using the reports from my supplier and I've been being quite naughty, but I've not been caught. And someone comes along to buy my brand and they're an aggregator or they're a bigger brand and they have the in-house, right? They know what they should, what things these have. Is my business less valuable?
Of course. Yes. And they do this due diligence. By the way, we work with some of such companies, very famous ones, a few in the US, a few in the UK as well. They do look into it. They have qualified people for compliance. They will look into this. So I wouldn't be surprised if they lower down the value because, yeah, I mean, who would want to buy a business which is always at risk? Imagine you have inventory lying in Amazon warehouse of, let's say, 1 million pieces. None of them is compliant. $1 million or whatever else the value is, it's at stake. Nobody in their right mind would like to acquire such a business.
Absolutely, yeah. That's why people need to think now. Like, yeah. Yes, maybe I'll sell my business in 3 years' time, right? But I've got customers that have purchased today, and let's say my products aren't compliant. Well, they could still come back to me in 3 years' time, and they could have had a problem. And another company buyers would want to see that, and they would do their due diligence. So it's really important that people do this. At the very least, like I said, get a quote to find out what you need for the place that you're selling in, from where your products are being made, what the product is, what it's being made out of, from guys like yourselves. At the very, very least, just do that. I mean, at the very least, get everything done properly by the law. But a nice, easy way to get people to do that is just find out what's required first, because it might not be so scary. And often, it probably isn't.
It isn't. So that's another thing. You bring up this right word, scary. It's not scary. And don't take it as a burden on you. One, it's saving your business. It's mandatory. I mean, you don't file your taxes, HMRC comes your way, of course, you know. So consider this like somebody like HMRC coming your way, you know. And actually, the bodies who put up these laws and regulations and the ones who are flagging things are people like HMRC. So in the UK, there's an organization called Office for Product Safety and Standards, OPSS. They call out companies, they call out products. So they put recalls on their LinkedIn, on their website, you know. So I'm sure nobody would want to get onto that list. You know, that's the worst thing to happen.
I nearly did a product that was on that list. And good job I checked it because it was on the list as a recoil, though. Bloody hell. Right? Yeah. Okay, let's stop using our products now. and you don't want to get an email from them, you know. And I've had that in the past, you know, something gets held at customs, it gets looked at, and it's like, hey, can you confirm this? Can you send us this test report? And it's never nice to deal with. At the end of the day, it could lead with extra cost, with things being held at port if you don't reply to them in time. So the cost of that can sometimes be more than the cost of getting the reports.
So I'll tell you a true story. Right? I'll tell you a true story, you know, from just 2 weeks ago. I moved house here. And the kitchen wasn't done and I needed, of course, to eat. So I went to a pizza shop, number one, I will not name them. And I said, okay, can you give me this garlic breadstick and these three, you know, types of dips? They say, oh no, they have been under recall. I moved to the pizza shop next door, the other one. Business is lost right away. Just because of one product, which was the dip for the garlic bread. I took away the entire business of garlic breadsticks, pizzas, everything else. I said, okay, fine. I don't want to eat at your place. I will go to the place next door. That's how it works. It's true. It's a true story of mine. 2 weeks ago, I did this. And I had no choice, actually. I wanted a particular dip. I love spicy things. I love habanero. I want a garlic dip. I love salsa. I wanted them, but they didn't have it. Recall. They couldn't do anything about it. So I'm like, fine. I want to eat.
When you have a brand, you want customers to shop with you and you want them to continue to shop with you. And you lose trust once, it's gone, it's not coming back. So I think that's a nice a moment to end on. Rahul, thank you so much for your time. You're definitely the sort of person that puts a level head on this sort of stuff. We're saying, look, it's not this big, scary topic. It is something that's required. And through using companies like Kima, you can find out the basic requirements, all of the requirements, without actually paying any money up front. So there's no reason why you shouldn't do it. So if people want to actually do that for their products, how are they able to reach out? How are they able to get those quotes?
Simple. Just send me an email, rahul.chawla@kima.com. That's my name. A dot in between at the rate Q-I-M-A. That's qualityindiamotheralpha.com. Yeah, send me an email. I'll help you out.
Perfect. Thank you very much. Hope you've all enjoyed this episode of the podcast with me coughing throughout. And we'll see you in the next one. Bye-bye.